Hey, I'm pretty excited about tonight, pretty excited about you, I'm pretty excited about the fun run, I'm pretty excited about just the community that we are. It's been really fun being with you these last few weeks and the fall retreat, and I just don't know how other people do it. I've got this constant reminder through the community that I'm able to be with you, that Jesus is real. And he is intricately involved in every part of our life. And that he is kind of the essence of what's happening in all of what's going on around us. And it's so easy to just kind of really get sidetracked and think about other things and to forget about how Jesus is really intricately involved in so many aspects and all aspects of our life. And we have a reminder of that tonight. We have Rob Meyer and Michelle Kruger getting baptized tonight after encounter. And it's so awesome. It's so exciting to see their excitement. They're all pumped up. They're ready to go. It's like, let's do this thing. And I love how we have these opportunities every once in a while to be recentered around Christ. And that's really what I want to talk about tonight, is recentering our lives. We need to do it all the time. It's like, it's just kind of our nature. We just kind of drift, recenter on Christ. We drift, recenter on Christ. Tonight we're gonna really talk about that whole concept that Jesus is the center. Jesus is the center. And I was reminded today from Abe that there are some pretty big name singers like Justin Bieber and Beyonce and maybe some others that they actually have prayer in backstage before they go on stage. And to think that Jesus is kind of a part of our pop culture, maybe, isn't that kind of weird to think? How many lyrics have been written over the years that have been inspired by Jesus? Been inspired by the Holy Spirit directing people, and to think of music and the way it is and where it's at, and some of the classical stuff that we have is really derived from Jesus. To think of, I don't know how many of you are sports fans like me, but you watch even your team, like my Tigers. I have to say my Tigers, even though I'm a new fan, but they're still mine, okay? They lost the other night, and their closing pitcher on the other team pointed up to Jesus, and I was like, oh, shoot, he loves Jesus too. Because you want to hate your other team. But you see people pointing to Jesus. You know that in the locker rooms you've got people that are praying before they go out. And have you noticed after the football games, they have these big prayer circles in the middle, like at the 50-yard line? Jesus, yeah, thanks, yes. Jesus is in the center of that. And how many times, even in that dark culture that can be sports, there is this thread of Christ. Been outside in the last, 2 weeks? Have you seen the color changes and the leaves and just realizing how unbelievably tied together all of nature is, and how Jesus is the center of that? He is the creator. He holds all things together, as it says in Colossians. That Jesus is the one who holds things together. Did you guys know that the origin of our education system derives from the Ivy League schools? And that we have Harvard and Princeton and Yale and others along the East Coast. Harvard started it off, I believe, as a Bible college. And as man kind of got a little bit puffed up and our ways became a little bit more important than God's ways, they kind of dissed the Bible college thing. And then down the road a little ways pops up the next Ivy League school to be the Bible college. And then they kind of parted with Jesus, and then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Did you know the Ivy League was a series of Bible colleges? And that this whole system that we're kind of basing our education system on started out of and was birthed out of schools that were committed to Jesus? Did you know that the whole marker of time, the year 2011, we are centered around the idea that we now live what we think is 2011 years precisely from the time Jesus was born. Jesus is the center. He is immersed into this culture. Did you know that just about every relief organization in town and around the world, we're talking about soup kitchens and hospitals, are motivated because of a man named Jesus? It would be a scary place to think what this world would look like if Jesus was not present. All of the relief efforts around the world, the service projects, the mission trips, are you kidding me? Without Jesus? Jesus is the center. Just about everything that you have here is derived from Jesus. I met the guy who runs the Midwest Food Bank on the south side of town. And just 6 years ago, he started this thing. And it started like he was this, he had an extra barn, an extra shed, and he was collecting extra food to help the Jesus Coffee House here in town just stay on their feet. And he just, I've met the guy. It's everything for the glory of Jesus Christ. And do you know that in just 6 years, they are one of five organizations that the Red Cross calls upon in national disasters? The Midwest Food Bank is one of five organizations that the Red Cross calls. You see how these things, they start small and grow? Jesus is intricately involved and is the centerpiece of this culture, this town, this school, and people want to do their darndest to turn their head and not see it. The reporters, they got mounds of people all praying in a circle, and they're like, oh, no, let's not look at that, Let's talk about the stupid question that I'm going to ask you that you're going to give a rhetorical question to, or a rhetorical answer to. This is just the way we are. We just ignore it. We're just not wanting to look at the obvious notion that Jesus Christ is front and center, even 2011 years later. And the fact that we have to measure that time easily because this is the whole marker of our culture is phenomenal to me. Jesus. Now, can you imagine what Jesus must feel like as he walks, floats, I'm not quite sure how he gets around here, but how he moves about and how he sees what's happening in the midst of all, and people are ignoring him. How must he feel? We're going to take a look at our third miracle in the book of John tonight. Our third miracle of seven. And I think we'll get a pretty good feeling of as to how Jesus probably felt about this very problem that we experienced was the very problem they were experiencing. Because back then, Jesus didn't float or hover. He had skin on, and he walked with sandals on, and he just maneuvered through Israel, observing just how distant these people were from the obviousness of who he was. So let's take a look at our text tonight. It says this, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Let's stop there for just a second. One of the Jewish festivals. You guys were with me, if you were with me last semester, you know that we covered the seven Jewish festivals. And these festivals or feasts were memorials. They were something that God had told people to remember and to do seven times in the course of a year. And it doesn't matter which festival. Apparently it's not so important to know which one because it just says one of, right? He went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. But let's just review very quickly. Does it matter if it was Passover? Who's the center of that whole thing? Who fulfilled that through the blood of who he was? Jesus. Does it matter? Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't Passover. Maybe it wasn't about a blood of a lamb. Maybe it was unleavened bread, where they're celebrating the sinlessness of this bread being broken. Who would fulfill that? Jesus. Well, maybe it's the third feast, where it's the Feast of First Fruits, where he comes up out of the ground, first of his kind. Who would fulfill that on the third day? Jesus. Maybe it was the Feast of Weeks, where we go seven weeks, 49 days, 50 days after Jesus raises from the dead. And perhaps we, as talking about the Spirit being the fulfillment of the law, who fulfilled that? Jesus. Maybe it wasn't one of the first four. Maybe it was the Feast of Trumpets. Doesn't matter. It would have been Jesus. Day of Atonement, Jesus. Feast of Tabernacles, Jesus. It was all pointing to him. All these feasts. We went through all that last semester. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. He's the center of all of those feasts. Does it matter which one it was? Doesn't matter. We know that Jesus is walking into a celebration of something that's pointing to him, and people don't see it. Next line. Now, there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool. Stop right there. We don't even get through that whole sentence. Sheep. What do we know about sheep? They were sacrificed for the sins of people. Lambs, sheep. And sheeps. Did I say sheeps? I probably did. Are we going to do a little bit of a try a visual aid here, okay? Because we don't have a picture for you, but I need to give you the best picture I've got in my mind from my visit to Israel a while back. You all are standing on Mount of Olives, okay? And there is the Kidron Valley that runs between us. You can kind of imagine that. And then there's another mount right here, Mount Moriah, which is all of Jerusalem. All of this is Jerusalem, by the way. And there's this mountain across from this mountain where the temple is. Okay? So high over there on the mountain. How are you guys? Good, good. Okay, we can see each other. We're waving. Good. All right. You guys can see that there's a relationship here. Okay. And on the east side of this city, there is a wall. There's a wall actually all the way around the city. And what seems to be the popular number tonight? Seven. How many gates do you think there might be? Good guess, there's seven. And the east gate was Gate Beautiful. And right in the entrance of this gate would be the temple. Okay? So from where you're sitting, over there, and your mountain, you can look across and you can see the temple is right here. And the east gate enters right into us, right into the temple. Now, a little bit further north and a little bit uphill is another gate, the Sheep Gate. And it's over here that that there is this pool, which is a natural spring. And if you think about it, back then it was really hard to pump water from here and there and everywhere, right? And in the temple, what was one of the main jobs of the priest once a year was to offer sacrifices on behalf of all the people. And there would be lambs. People would be bringing lamb after lamb after lamb around Passover to rid themselves of their sin. And the priests, they just had the most horrible job in the sense that they were just killing lambs and sheep constantly throughout a day. And this temple courtyard was a bloodbath. It was bloody. It was the market. It was nasty. And they needed a source of water to clean out this area. Otherwise, the blood would just kind of stay and be there. So they needed some kind of a way for water to be rushing through. That's why they picked the temple area to be here, because just uphill to the north a little bit is this natural pool, which they could draw water from this spring, and they would use that water to wash through, and it would sweep down the side of the mountain. Following me? Am I boring you yet? Okay, we're going to get there. Hang with me and you'll be bored soon. No, you won't. There's a gate that goes through to this, and a sheep that would enter through that gate had one job, and that was to die. Jesus was the sheep who died for us. And I have to imagine this. He's coming through that sheep gate, and he's thinking, huh, there's the name of the gate, sheep gate. I am the sheep. I'm the fulfillment of this feast, whatever one it is. Take your pick, 1 of 7. And I am the fulfillment of the sheep. I am the sheep. I am the lamb. I am the one who will pour out my life for these people. Can you see what it might have felt like to be Jesus? Now, it's also coming through the sheep gate, okay? And I find this to be interesting, too, that he also, in a different place in Scripture, says that he is the gate. And I actually, can we flip forward to that? It's like 3 or 4 ahead. 1, 2, blank screen, 3. Okay, it says this, I am the gate. This is in John 10:9. Jesus says, I am, not just the sheep, I'm the gate, okay? Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. And you know what's interesting? If anybody was listening to this, if anybody knew anything about this whole structure and how the temple was set up and how these gates were set up, and if somebody talked about sheep entering through the gate, everybody would have known the sheep gate. The sheep gate, which is on the north end next to that pool. They're going to kill this. They're going to bring these gates in, or these gates in. They're going to bring these sheep in, and they've got one job. They're going to die. Sheep don't go both ways through this gate. But Jesus says, not only am I the sheep, not only am I the one that's the fulfillment of these feasts, I am the gate, and whoever enters through me can come in, and they can go out free for pasture. Jesus is a different kind of gate. He's the fulfillment of the gate. Let's go back to our first text, please. So he's the sheep, he's the gate, and he's the fulfillment of prophecy. We haven't even got through verse 2 yet, okay? And there's this pool there, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by 5 covered colonnades, okay? Can you picture the colonnades around this pool? And this is a very religious setting. This is just north of the temple, and this is a very religious, deep-rooted, historical setting. And the 5 colonnades, why did they choose 5? Because this group of people, the Jews who built this temple, were so consumed with the idea that we've got a law, we've got a set of rules that we follow that nobody else follows. I mean, we take rules seriously. We're God's chosen people, and God's chosen people like to keep rules. And for some reason in our culture today, things have not changed that much. The more churchy you feel like you are, the more committed to rules you seem to be. And the more you seem to hold your nose up high and say, they don't do the rules like we do the rules. They don't follow God like we follow God. And there's a pride that enters in, and it is ugly and it is wrong. The 5 covered colonnades represent the first 5 books of the Bible called the Pentateuch. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, full of rules. Numbers and Deuteronomy. That's the law. That's what was originally given to God's chosen people. And they memorized that. The Jews loved that. They loved the old law. That's all they had. They didn't have the New Testament like we did. They didn't even have some of the other parts of the Old Testament. They just had those first 5 books. They held on to them dearly. They felt like this was the source of their identity. And so these 5 colonnades surrounded this pool. Jesus must have walked up to those five colonnades and must have thought, huh, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. I remember writing those. I'm the fulfillment of those too. Everywhere he looks, it's about him. Everything he does, it's about him. Everything that the people are celebrating, it's about him. And nobody sees it because all they can see is religion. All they can see is tradition. All they can see is what they've all practiced up to this point. All they can see is the festival, the ritual, the gate, the sheep, the symbolism, the five colonnades, and now they see this pool. And here we have this setting where these people are gathered around the pool. So we've got a good picture of where we're at? Got a good picture in the setting? Let's get into the story now. It says, here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. And one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. Hadn't been able to walk for 38 years. Now, I'm not saying that he was laying right there next to the pool for 38 years. But he has been in a state where he has been hopeless for a long, long time. And when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in his condition for a long time, he asked him an interesting question. You want to get well? You want to get well? It's such a simple question that I feel like it might be worth asking you tonight. I know you're not completely healthy. I know you're not completely whole. I know that you don't have perfection within you and that you need some kind of health, but I'm not going to assume, like Jesus didn't assume, that the answer was yes. He asked the question, do you want to get well? And I think that we are prone to think that Jesus only heals those people who really believe, who really have faith. If you had enough faith, oh man, that bothers me. That bothers me. If you just had enough faith, brother, well, it's not about me, is it? But yet we seem to really grasp hold of that idea that you need to have enough faith or else God's not going to heal you. So Jesus comes along and he asks that question. Do you want to get well? What's his answer? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. Because it was believed that once the water was stirred, the first person in would receive some sort of a health benefit. Okay? So my first question is, how's that been working out for the other guys laying around the pool? Huh? Been sitting around for quite a while. Why are you still here? If this pool and this tradition and this religion is working so well for us, why are we all still sitting here laying? But yet he's got all of his hope in that. He says, while I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me every time. Sounds like one of my kids. What a lame excuse. Do you want to get well? Well, I tried. They always go down first. They stir that water and I want to get down there and everyone gets down ahead of me. Does it sound like a guy full of faith? Does it sound like a guy who's looking Jesus back in the eye and says, yeah, I want to get well. And you can do it. Not in the least. And yet this is what Jesus says. And Jesus said to him, how about you just get up and pick up your mat and go home? I don't know if he said it ticked off or not, but I would have. Get up. pick up your mat and walk. And at once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. And the day in which this took place was a Sabbath day. Now, do you guys know much about the Sabbath? Yeah, let's just read it. And so the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, "It's the Sabbath, and the law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" Maybe we'll read that in a second again. But another thing I noticed when I was in Israel, as I noticed elevators. Elevators are different in Israel than they are here. There's still this shape deal, right? The rectangle deal, and the door opens up, and you walk in. And there's, on the outside, if you want to go to the fourth floor, they got the number 4, and they got the... That's all the same, okay? You've seen them. Go to Waterson. They're pretty cool. But next to that traditional-looking elevator is a skinnier elevator with no number pad on the outside, just an elevator. And the reason is because on the Sabbath, you are not supposed to work. And so what I noticed was that above this elevator, it just says Sabbath. And that elevator stops on a Sabbath day. It stops at every floor so that you don't have to work to push the button. I'm not kidding. Because pushing the button would be considered work. This is the culture. This is the religion that still exists in Israel tonight. And so when we read this again, I think you might understand a little bit of where these Jewish leaders are coming from, because you know what they love. I already talked about what they love. They love the rules. We got rules, man. Jesus gave us rules, and we're going to follow them so well that he's going to be so happy with us because we keep the rules to a T. God's going to be so happy with me. And they see this guy who's been laying on his back for 38 years pop up and start walking around. And in order to please God, somebody comes up to him and says, "Dude, you're breaking the law. You're carrying your mat. It's ridiculous." But he replied at the bottom, "The man who made me well said, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" I'm just doing what I was told. This guy's really great, isn't he? Like, really like one of my kids, you know? "I'm just doing what I was told, man." Next slide. So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" Oh, they're going to investigate. God's going to be so happy with them, right? God's going to be so happy. When I investigate and find out who told this guy to actually pick up his mat after he was down for 38 years, who has the audacity to stand up and actually walk around with his mat? Well, the man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Let's stop there for just a second. I gotta talk about this. He had no idea who Jesus was. He was healed by Jesus, who he had no idea who he was. He received a blessing from a guy he didn't know. He received a blessing without having any faith. And I have to tell you, I know some people in my life, some relatives of mine that I really want to name, but I won't because this is a podcast. That are so blessed, and they don't recognize that it's from Jesus. They are so blessed
and they don't even know his name. And I think you were so close to being destroyed, broke, hurt, lonely, and now you've got a job, you got family, you got a wife, you got all these blessings. God's pouring blessing on top of you, and you don't even know his name. You can't remember that this was from him. I wonder tonight how many of us have been blessed by Jesus and we've forgotten. You have forgotten how you got here to school. You have forgotten how many doors were opened to allow you to be in the relationships that you're in today. You have forgotten about how God has spared you some very, very horrible accidents, perhaps, that you could have been in physically, car accidents. Oh yeah, I remember that. It was that one time. You could be crippled today. He has blessed you. He has protected you so many times over. And I think it is possible that we have forgotten, even as Christians. Oh yeah, I think Jesus, I don't know who that was. And we chalk it up to something else and we forget that we live in a town just like this was a town where Jesus is present. He is here. He has been in your life. So he said, I don't know. Don't know that guy's name. Slipped away in the crowd. And later, Jesus found him at the temple. And he said to him, see, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. Now, we don't know what the sin is. I mean, it could be that there's a specific sin that we don't know about that's not listed here. But I really believe it's the sin. It's the sin of being lazy. It's the sin of not thinking and recognizing that Jesus is the Christ, the one who is present, the one who is, everything was being celebrated about him around this guy, and he's just laying on a mat, and the source of all life comes up to him and looks him in the eyes and asks him, do you want to get well? He's got some response. Jesus says, stop that. Stop that. Or something worse is going to happen to you. Because I've fixed the outside of you. I fixed the outside problem. But I got to tell you, you got to change the heart. You got to recognize me. You got to change who you are. You got to change this whole nature of who you are. Because you know what? Even healed people, especially maybe healed people, have more of this problem than the crippled people do. Because us that are so blessed don't realize what kind of need we have. We don't. We're wrapped in a big, thick Band-Aid. And its name's Abercrombie and Fitch. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and he told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. Now you can take that two ways. You can think, oh, maybe he's trying to get him in trouble. Maybe he's just still a jerk. No. I think it's just kind of cool that he recognizes the guy. This is about Jesus. He recognizes it's about Jesus. And what I notice here is that this guy was wrapped up in putting his hope into a pool because religion told him to. And then I see a whole group of other people that see this positive thing happen. And they look at it with skepticism because it didn't happen within their rules. And since it didn't happen within our rules, it can't really be good because religion tells them so. And I don't know if you're maybe more inclined to be the individual here that's got his hope rooted in things that are kind of empty, or whether you're somebody that's really proud to be an encounter member, and we just kind of, we judge that, oh, they must do something a little bit weird because they're not doing like we do it, or whatever. Don't do that. Jesus is Jesus. And he does weird things, really cool weird things, here and there and everywhere. And it's our job to praise him for it. Does that make sense? We do these baptisms, and there's some really neat, really, I think there's just some powerful analogy that goes with that, and that God's just in the midst of that kind of surrender. And I've seen this, I think it's one of the most godly acts we can possibly do to invite Jesus into our midst. And yet, I know of a lot of churches in this state that really look down upon us and think, dude, you guys aren't really a church, and you're baptizing people? Can't really be Jesus there. And we know from this fact, we're like, back off, people. This is, Abe was getting upset with it today in the campus house, and just being like, this is a church. This is my church, baby. And you can't judge this for what's happening. We can't do the same thing for others either. Right? Let's not let religion dictate what God's doing within us. But let's have eyes wide open to see that it's Jesus in all these things. That it's Jesus that's just present in all of these areas of our life. And what I want to do here just to close tonight is I want to do this exercise that I used to do a lot that I really find it to be powerful, but it doesn't work unless you're involved. And that's where I'm just going to open up the floor for you to verbally recognize how Jesus is a part of your life. That maybe you've been a little bit turning a blind eye to the fact that Jesus really, really has been involved in, but you just haven't really seen it. And so this can be like a thank you prayer. Jesus, I want to thank you for, and it can be education, it can be health, it can be just recognizing whatever, for relationships, for grace. I'm stealing your ideas. These are things I want you to just, what is it? What is it that God, Jesus, has made himself real to you in your life, and you want to acknowledge him for it, maybe re-acknowledge him for it at this time? And so I just feel like we need to, as a body, to just collectively get together. We're just a family here, and we're just going to go one at a time. Just when you feel like it, you just get loud, and you know what? Maybe two of you go at the same time, and that'd be awesome. I don't care. Okay? But that we would take this as a time of prayer, and recognizing that if Jesus can be at the Midwest Food Bank, and he can be in Jerusalem, and he can be in all of these things that we talked about, and he can be everywhere else, then I think he can be present here tonight. And that he is in this place, and we got these high ceilings. And I just wonder if we could just lift up these praises to him and just say, Jesus, thank you for being whatever. Is that cool? We good with that? Got enough direction? All right. Let's all stand. And let's let these prayers go to Jesus. Let's just start to make this easier. Jesus, I'm gonna start this thing off. And Jesus, I just want you to forgive me for the times I've not recognized you. And right now, God, I just ask that these next few statements would just be, Jesus, thank you.